Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24. We've gotten down to about verse 43, I believe, in our study, but last Wednesday evening I kind of used a shotgun blast to look at verse 36 down to that context. I wanted to go back and mention some things that I'd mentioned before, and I wanted to add to those things. I recognize and realize that at verse 36, many people believe that the subject changes, but of that day. Many people believe that that day under consideration is the second coming of the Lord. Of course, you know my position that I don't believe it's the second coming of the Lord. I believe it's still the same subject under consideration from the beginning of the chapter, and that is the destruction of Israel and the city of Jerusalem in 70 AD by the Romans. And so it would be easy for me to just say, well, it's the second day, our second coming of the Lord. It begins at verse 36. It'd be easy for me to say that and just move on and just take the position that other people take on it. But I can't do that because I don't believe the Scriptures teach that. So I have to, having studied the passage for a good number of years, I have to present what I believe it teaches in regard to truth. I do not believe that the subject changes till chapter 25 and verse 1, and then the subject changes there. I believe the continuation from verse 36 all the way through the end of chapter 24 is still dealing with the destruction of Jerusalem. And I just want to, I know that there are those in the audience who believe that it's the second coming of Christ under consideration from verse 26 throughout chapter 25. But I want to ask you just to bear with me and give consideration to the things that I have to say. And then if I haven't changed your mind, then by all means, you know, continue to study it or continue to accept the position that you have accepted. I just want to begin at verse 36, go back over some things that I've mentioned, but I want to add some things to it. I want us to clearly understand, especially what is mentioned in this last portion of the chapter, and see that, yes, the language does seem to indicate that it could be speaking of the second coming of Christ. But also, the language does seem to indicate that it could be a judgment of Israel and the city of Jerusalem under consideration as well. And so our job is to try to figure out, well, which one is it? Is it both? I don't think it's both. Let's begin to look at the text again, and I'll try to get through this chapter tonight and into chapter 25. Verse 36 again, but of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. That day, remember, in verse 36, that day I believe to be the same time period that he was speaking of earlier. They had asked in chapter 24 and in verse 3, chapter 24 and in verse 3, tell us when these things will be. Well, Jesus doesn't answer that question because no one knew the answer to that question except God only. So he does not give them the answer, but of that day and hour. Remember, the word day and hour simply refers to a specific time period. They ask when, he doesn't give them a specific time period because only the Father knows. Now, I want you to note that day again. That day, I took you back in the Gospel of Luke in chapter 17, in the Gospel of Luke in chapter 17 in verse 22, and remember in chapter 17 of the Gospel of Luke, it clearly indicates throughout the context that we've studied in regard to this, that it's the subject of the destruction of Jerusalem under consideration. But in Luke 17 and in verse 22, I just want to read that again. For as the lightning that flashes out of one part under heaven shines to the other part under heaven, so also the Son of Man will be in His day. In His day. So what day is that? What is His day? I want to suggest to you that His day is the day under consideration in Matthew 24 and in verse 36. Of that day. What day? Well, it's His day. The Lord's day. That's whose day it is. It's the Lord's day. It's the day of vengeance. in which all things that are written will be fulfilled. Remember, we read that in Luke chapter 21 in regard to this. In Luke 21 and in verse 22. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. These are the days. When did it happen? Well, it happened in His day. It happened in the Lord's day. Not only is it His day, not only is it the days of vengeance, but back in chapter 17 again, in chapter 17 and in verse 26, it is mentioned as a day again. And as it was in the days of Noah, so it will also be in the days of the Son of Man. So the days of the Son of Man. Luke 17 and in verse 30. Luke 17 and in verse 30. Even so will it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. So we have His day, the day when He is revealed, and the day when all things which are written, that is all things concerning Israel and the city of Jerusalem, will be fulfilled in the days of vengeance. So when we come to Matthew chapter 24 and verse 36, that's the day that I believe is under consideration. If that's not the day under consideration, then what day is under consideration in Luke 17? Luke 17 and in verse 24, Luke 17 and in verse 24, when it says, so also the Son of Man will be in His day. What day is that? If it's not His day when He is revealed, if it's not His day as the Lord's day when He brings judgment and destruction upon Israel and the city of Jerusalem, what day is it? I believe it's the same day as that in Matthew 24 and in verse 36. But back in Matthew chapter 24, note in verse 37. Verse 37 now. Matthew 24 and verse 37. After having mentioned the day in verse 36, verse 37 says, but as the days of Noah were, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man be. Know this now. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark. So you got days and day again. And I spent a good period of time going back to the Old Testament in a sermon on Sunday evening on one occasion, showing you that in the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians, the prophets referred to that time period as days and the day of the Lord. So what do we have here? We have the days and the day of the Lord. Even in regard to the time in which Noah lived. The time in which Noah lived involved both days and a day. Note that again. Matthew 24 and in verse 39 or verse 38. For as in the days before the flood, there's the days, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. Until the day that he entered the ark. Was the world destroyed the day he entered the ark? No. Neither was Jerusalem destroyed in a day. Remember, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. But still we have days and a day under consideration. But when it comes to the context of Matthew 24 and verse 36, it seems like we just throw that away, that there are no such things as days and day. There's just the day. That the days represent the destruction of Jerusalem and the day represents the second coming of the Lord. I want to suggest to you again that they're speaking of the same time period. Same time period, using days plural and days singular. Note again, if you will, with me in Matthew 24 and verse 39. And did not know, that is the people of Noah's day, did not know until the flood came. They didn't know what. Noah had been preaching to them for 120 years. They weren't aware of what was coming upon them. Because they had not given heed. They had not paid attention to what Noah had said. And so they did not know. Note this. They did not know until the flood came and took them all away. So also will be the coming of the Son of Man. So the flood took them all away. Now, what does that mean? The flood took them all away. And this is important for our understanding of the context now. The flood took them all away. What did the flood do? We know the flood didn't take all of them away because there were some left. Brother Van?
I don't think any righteous were taken away at that point. I don't think there were any righteous that were taken away in the flood.
No. No righteous were taken away in the flood. So if the righteous were not taken away in the flood, what happened to them?
The righteous were saved.
They were saved. They were in the ark. They were left.
But in Jerusalem, some did perish.
Some did perish. Okay, so get this now. Back to Noah in his day. The flood took them all away. I want to note what that word means, took away. It means to take from among the living by violence, or to take away or to remove by death or destruction, thus to destroy or kill. Now let me give you some examples of that. Take away here. In John 19, the Gospel of John 19 and verse 15, John 19 and in verse 15, but they cried out, note this, here it is, away with him, away with him, crucify him. Away. There's the word, away with him. So they took Jesus away. They crucified him. Away with him, away with him. What are they calling for? They're calling for his death. They're calling for his destruction. Thus, away with him, crucify him. Let's see it used again. Acts chapter 8. Acts chapter 8. And in verse 33, in his humiliation, his justice was taken away. And who will declare his generation? Note this, for his life is taken, there's the word, from the earth. His life is taken from the earth. So what does the word mean? Well, it means to take from the land of the living by violence, or take away or remove by death or destruction, thus to destroy or kill. That's what the word means. Look with me there in Acts 8 again, or not Acts 8, Acts 22, Acts 22 and verse 22, Acts 22 and verse 22. So you're taking the living, you're taking one who is alive, you're taking his life from the earth. Acts 22 and in verse 22. And they listened to him until this word. And then they raised their voices and said, note this, away with such a fellow from the earth, for he is not fit to live. Away with him, for he is not fit to live. They're calling for his death. They're calling for his destruction. Paul's on that occasion. I believe it's Paul under consideration. And then one other, and then we're going to move on. John 11 and verse 48, because I think you see the meaning of this word. They were, all were taken away in the flood. John 11 and verse 48. If we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come, note this, and take away, there's our word, take away both our place, that is our city and nation. So what do they mean? The Romans are going to come and take away our place, take away our city and our nation. That is, destroy our city and our nation. Now we come back to Matthew 24, where we were looking at that word, Matthew 24, and in verse 39, and so the people of Noah's day did not know until the flood came and took them all away. What did it do to them? It destroyed them. It killed them. But it didn't destroy all of them. Some were left. Noah and his family were left. Do we not know that? We all know that. Okay, verse 39, we know what to take away. All were taken away. They were all destroyed. They were all killed. But we know that some were left. Now, why am I bringing that out? Because look at the next verse. Look at the next verses. Verse 40. Two men will be in the field. One will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and the other left. Now the word taken here in verse 40 and 41 is a different word than that which we just saw in verse 39. But it is synonymous with the word that we just saw. in verse 39. Let me give you an example of it. In John 19 and in verse 16. John 19 and verse 16. So he delivered them to him to be crucified. Here's the word now. So they took Jesus and led him away. They took Jesus and led him away. What did they do? They seized Jesus, kind of as a prisoner, and took him away to be crucified. That's what they did. They took him away to be destroyed. So there's our word. Thus it means to seize, to lay hold of, with the idea of force being used and violence being used. As a matter of fact, look with me in Matthew 21. Matthew 21 and in verse 35. Matthew 21 and in verse 35. And the vine dressers, note this, took his servants, beat one, killed one, and stoned the other. Took his servants, they seized them by violence and by force. They beat one, killed one, and stoned the other. Verse 39 in that context, speaking about the Son now, and it has reference to Jesus Christ, and they caught him, there it is, and cast him out of the vineyard and killed him, caught him, took him, seized him. They seized him by violence and by force for the purpose of killing him. I want to suggest to you in verse 40 and 41 of Matthew 24, that's what's under consideration. They were all taken away in the flood. They were all destroyed or killed in the flood. During the Roman and Jewish wars, two men will be in the field. One will be taken. One's going to be destroyed. One's going to be killed. He may be taken prisoner. And the other will be left. If one is taken and there's another left, what does that mean that he's left? Let me go back to verse 39. When the flood came, all was destroyed, but there were some left. Doesn't have anything to do with the righteous and the unrighteous, because some of Noah's family after that was perhaps became unrighteous. They weren't saved spiritually. They were saved physically. They were saved from the flood physically. It wasn't a spiritual salvation. It was a physical salvation from the flood. Peter speaks of it. As they were saved by water, we're saved by the water of baptism. But they were saved physically, we're saved spiritually. So it was a physical deliverance. The ones who were taken is the ones who were destroyed in the flood. The ones who were left were simply the ones left in the land of the living. That's all. That's all left means. They're left in the land of the living. In verses 40 and 41, those who are taken are those who are taken prisoner and destroyed. They're killed. The ones who are left are simply left in the land of the living. In verse 42, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour or what time your Lord is coming. So watch here. That is, be alert, be vigilant. Be continuously ready, lest through remissness and indolence some destructive calamity comes upon you as it did on the people in Noah's day. So watch, be alertful, be alert, be continuously ready, for you do not know the time, you do not know the hour. That word hour there, we'll not go back over it, it simply means time. You do not know the time your Lord is coming. Verse 43. But know this, if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, if the master of the house would known what hour, I mentioned this last Wednesday evening, the word hour there is what watch in the King James Version. Remember, before the Roman dominance of the Jews broke their night watch, that is, their time in which they would keep watch for safety over the camp of Israel, into three shifts, three equal periods of time at night. But when the Romans got dominance over the Jews, they broke it down into four watches. And it's not the word hour here, it's the word watch. So, but know this, if the master of the house, if the head of the house had known, he doesn't know, had known what hour the thief would come, what watch. Well, in what watch was the thief coming? Was he coming from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the evening? Was he coming from 9 o'clock to midnight? Was he coming from midnight to 3? Or from 3 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock in the morning? Which watch during the night is the thief coming? Well, the homeowner does not know. Now, if the homeowner had known he was coming in the second watch, we'll say from 9 o'clock at night to midnight, then what would the homeowner have been doing? He would have been alert during those 3 hours from 9 o'clock at night to 12 o'clock at night, waiting for the thief. But the homeowner does not know. He has to be ready and alert all the time, the whole 24-hour time period, because he doesn't know when the thief, and the word thief here, remember there's two different words for thief in the New Testament. One takes by force. One will hit you over the head and steal from you. The thief under consideration here is the one who steals secretly, by stealth. That is, he slips into your house at night and he steals from you without you knowing about it, hoping not to wake you up. And that's the thief that is under consideration here. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, if he had known, he would have watched. He would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Broken into. Dug through, if I remember the King James Version, is the idea, because their houses were stone, mostly clay. And so they would simply dig a hole in the side of it and sneak into the house. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect, at an hour that you need to be ready for. Now, I understand that, yes, the Son of Man, Jesus Christ, is coming at an hour that we do not know, and we need to be ready all the time. The Scriptures teach that. But the same thing would be true for the days in which Israel would be destroyed and the city of Jerusalem would be destroyed. They did not know when he was coming. They had some idea because they had signs. But again, they did not know what watch. They did not know what specific period of time he was coming. Just like the house owner did not know which watch, which part of the night was the thief coming. He didn't know which part of the night the thief was coming. And neither did the people in this day know what part of the time in the days that the Lord was coming. The lesson that's being taught there in verse 43 and 44 is that of being ready. Being ready. And it doesn't matter whether it's being ready in the second coming or being ready in the coming of the Son of Man upon the city of Jerusalem. They had to both, we got to be ready now when the Lord comes. They had to be ready then when he came in judgment upon the city of Jerusalem. Verse 45, who then is a faithful, trustworthy, reliable, dependable, and wise, that is prudent and sensible and intelligent servant, literally slave, whom his master, whom his Lord, the King James Version says, or master or owner, made ruler over his household. That is, he appointed him custodian over his household to give them food in due season. That is, the master of the house, the head of the house, would choose one slave whom he would appoint over the management of the rest of the household of slaves. And when the master goes away, that master would be responsible for providing them their nourishment and their food in due season at the right time, at the appropriate time, at the regularly appointed time. Verse 46, blessed is that servant. Blessed means favored, approved in the master's sight. Blessed is that servant, literally slave, whom his master, whom his Lord, when he comes, will find so doing. What's the point here? The point is he had told them to watch. Be alert, be vigilant, be continuously ready. And that's what he's teaching here. Same point being taught. So this servant needs to be busy doing what he has been appointed to do. What did Jesus just appoint these apostles to do? Watch, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour you do not know. Be ready, be vigilant, continuously ready. And just like this slave who has been appointed over the master's household, he needs to be busy carrying out the instructions of his master. Verse 47. Assuredly or truly, verily, the King James Version says, that is, I tell you a truth, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all of his goods. Yes, he'll make him ruler. He'll appoint him over so much more of his property the next time if he proves himself to be faithful and trustworthy, reliable and dependable. But, verse 48, but if that evil servant, that wicked servant, morally here, slave, says in his heart, that is, says to himself, thinks to himself, my master is delaying his coming. He's delaying his coming. That is, he's taking a long time at whatever he's doing. And he begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards. That is, he begins to carouse. That's what he does. Begins to live a desolate lifestyle because the master is away. He's not carrying out the instructions of the master. He's not faithful and trustworthy, reliable and dependable. Jesus wants the apostles to be that in regard to the destruction of Jerusalem and the nation of Israel. He wants them to be alert, be vigilant, be continuously ready, be faithful and trustworthy, be people I can count on and depend on. Verse 50, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him. He'll come, he'll return on a day when he's not expecting him. And at an hour that he is not aware of. He didn't know when he was coming, because the master didn't tell him when he was coming back. Note this in verse 51. And will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. Will cut him in two. To cut someone in two was a punishment that was engaged in by almost all ancient nations that we know of. The Egyptians, the Chaldeans, the Hebrews, the Romans. Let me just give you some examples. Daniel 2 and in verse 5, the Chaldeans. Chaldeans are Babylonians as well. Daniel 3 and in verse 29. The Hebrews, that is the Jews. 1 Samuel 15 and verse 33. Or what about Hebrews 11 and verse 37? To cut someone in two with a sword. That is to cut them in pieces. Now this is not language that describes a spiritual judgment. I recognize and realize that people take it that way, and that's all right if you want to take it that way. But come the judgment day, no one is going to be cut in two with a sword. What happens during time of war though? People are cut in two. They're killed. They're destroyed. That's the picture that is being painted here. He's calling upon the apostles to remain faithful, trustworthy, reliable, and dependable. Because if you're not, guess what's going to happen to you? You're going to be destroyed right along with everybody else. Note this before we run out of time. Will cut him in two and appoint him his portion. Note this. This is important. With the hypocrites. Now, where have you read about hypocrites before? In the context of Matthew 24. You know where you read about them? You read about them in chapter 23. Verse 13, verse 14, verse 15, verse 23, verse 25, verse 27, verse 29. And it all led up to Matthew 24, the destruction of Jerusalem. Who were the hypocrites? The scribes and the Pharisees and the religious leaders of that day. Those who inhabited Israel and the city of Jerusalem. Those who were going to be destroyed. Go back to Matthew chapter 23. Matthew chapter 23. We'll just look at the last couple of occasions in verse 27. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones. Verse 29, woe to you, scribes and hypocrites, because you build the tomb of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous. Jumping down in the context in verse 23, he says in verse 34, therefore indeed I send you prophets, wise men, scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify. Some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the altar and the temple. Assuredly I say to you, all of these things will come on this generation. Same statement made in Matthew chapter 24. And he's speaking this to the hypocrites. So what's he saying there in verse 45 and following in regard to the wise and faithful servant? He's speaking about the wise and faithful servants, his apostles. You be trustworthy. You be reliable. You be dependable. Be alert. Be watchful. Always be vigilant, because I'm coming in destruction upon Israel and the city of Jerusalem. And if you're not faithful, trustworthy, reliable, and dependable, you'll be cut in two, you'll be destroyed, you'll be killed with the hypocrites, with those whom he had just declared his judgment upon in chapter 23. And then there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. Let me give you this before we run out of time. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. Luke 13 in verse 28. Luke 13, verse 28. Luke 13 and verse 28. Every time you see the phrase weeping and gnashing of teeth, don't automatically think hell. Don't automatically think eternal punishment. Luke 13, verse 28. Luke 13 and verse 28. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth when you see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and all the prophets in the kingdom of God, and yourself thrust out. To the religious leaders of his day, that's what Jesus said. There'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Weeping is mourning. It is lamenting. It is wailing. In the word itself, the emphasis is upon the noise that is making. The gnashing of teeth is the grinding of teeth, the gritting of teeth. It has reference to a couple of things. Sometimes it has reference to the gritting and grinding of teeth as an expression of strong and often violent anger and rage and fury, such as those who stoned Stephen to death in Acts 7 in verse 54. They gnashed at him with their teeth. Sometimes the word has reference to the gnashing of teeth, and this is important. Lamentations chapter 2 and verse 16. Lamentations 2 and in verse 16. They gnashed at them with their teeth. That is, the enemies of Judah gnashed at them with their teeth when they brought destruction upon that city by the Babylonians. Another way in which the gnashing of teeth is used is through pain. Through pain. And when we read about it in regard to judgment, that is the second coming of Christ and men being cast into hell, the weeping and gnashing of teeth there has reference to the pain that is inflicted on one. One grits his teeth, one grinds his teeth because of pain. I don't know if you ever remember watching the old Western movies and someone was digging a bullet out of a fellow that got shot. What would they stick in his mouth? A stick to keep him from grinding his teeth, from breaking his teeth and biting his tongue off. That's the grinding and the gnashing of teeth because of the pain that one is going to feel. Well, when you're cut in two with a sword, when you're being hacked up, you suppose there's going to be any weeping, that is, wailing, crying out? You suppose there's going to be any pain? Absolutely there will be. So just because you see the phrase, weeping and gnashing of teeth, don't automatically assume that it has reference to being cast into hell, because it does not necessarily. All right, that was my last lesson on Matthew 24 for a while. Thank you very much for your kind attention this evening.